Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is loading. SteveJonesShow.com audio is sponsored by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call them at 800-609-9484 or visit them online at REWfinancial.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Give Rick a call at 800-609-9484. You can go online to REWfinancial.com. Here in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Kevin ran down what he's talked about for the past hour.
And?
Maybe we'll go in a different direction this half hour.
And that's fine. That's you've the way
covered,
it should be.
You've covered everything.
Great.
Since the promo said on the mark that we would talk bracketology, let's try that.
I promoted that as well, as a matter of fact.
Of course you did. Well, Chris Dobbertine is the bracketologist for bloggingthebracket.com. That's bloggingthebracket.com. Chris, welcome. First time you've ever been on the show. It is great to have you with us.
Great to be with you.
All right. When do you actually start fiddling around and putting together mock brackets in your own mind as to where people fit and don't fit, and what's the formula you like to use?
Well, I usually start, I do a preseason bracket in November. I don't do what most people do, which is do one right after the end of the Final Four. I think that's just a little bit silly because you know, you're going to have a lot of recruiting challenges and NBA draft challenges. It's a little too hard to settle on rosters at that point. So wait till November and things are settled. I take a break until after the non-conference season is over in January, and then I go weekly until February, then I go bi-weekly, and then into March I do things a little more frequently. Really, I try to replicate the committee as much as I possibly can. I rely on the RPI more than I'd probably like to, but they do. And, you know, it's a flawed metric, but that's what they use, so I kind of have to deal with it. But I do pay attention to KenPom and Staggerin and all the other kind of advanced statistics that are out there, even though those don't necessarily get used by the committee.
What about BPI?
BPI I tend to ignore because it kind of seems to be, you know, ESPN's, you know, that's kind of their, you know, their metric that they're kind of using, they're trying to push as a, you know, an alternative to the RPI. And it seems just kind of a little more self-serving on their end. But it is something that I do look at as well a little bit. But really, I weigh KenPom and Staggerin a little bit more.
Yeah, in fact, I know Dick Girardi and I, when we sit down and we start working toward games, well, KenPom is one we take a look at because of the statistical breakdown analysis that he does, points per possession, things like that, which we really like and use in our broadcast. The RPI, I know, is a flawed metric. Always has. Mm-hmm. Always has been. So for you, does the eyeball test ever come into play for you, and how much does it come into play for you, and then do you fall back on the RPI?
I'd say I weigh the RPI a little more heavily than the eyeball test, but the eyeball test does play a role. As I was telling another podcast that I was on yesterday, one thing that I think the committee really needs to take a look at is scoring margin. Yeah. And from this perspective, not necessarily, you know, kind of what happened with Syracuse last night where they played a really close game with Maryland, a team they should have handled, and it looks like they were going to handle them for about 6 minutes left in the game. I'm kind of thinking more of a situation like a Toledo, who went to play at Kansas on December the 30th, lost a 10-point game on the road. I don't understand why scoring margin in that case doesn't play a bit more of a role, especially when you're thinking about a neutral site tournament where you're not going to have that home crowd advantage necessarily. You know, you think about what Toledo would have done losing that game by 10 points at Paul Gallen and then maybe playing a rematch, you know, either at their building or at a neutral site. You know, that result could have been very, very different, and I don't understand why the committee doesn't kind of weigh that a little bit more. But then again, they have so many other things on their plate while they're trying to evaluate, you know, 100 or so teams between automatic bids and at-large to try to get them selected and seated.
See, my question about that, and this, in the question, if we're sitting in a committee room, I would look at you and I'd say, okay, Chris, the Toledo game, was it, did 5 become 10 or did 20 become 10?
Yeah, and that's the thing. And in that case, I mean, Toledo played them really close for a while, and then Kansas kind of took over late. So you have to go a little bit more deep, into it. And, that's, like I said, a whole lot of data that you kind of have to remember. Yeah. And given the amount of time the committee has, may not be, the most feasible option out there.
In fact, I did a game last week, Penn State at Nebraska. The final was 13. I can tell you it wasn't a 13-point game. It became...
No, not at all.
It ratcheted down to 13in the end. So if you're there, you can see that. What's tougher... Go ahead. I'm sorry, Chris.
That happens a lot with blowouts, too, when you get, kind of that second string in there, and they're not quite as good defensively and offensively, and, the team that's trying to come back still has their A players in there.
For you, what's tougher, the one line or the two line this year?
The two line to me is extremely tough. The one line looks very solid to me. I really don't think both Syracuse and lost last night. I think that would have put a little bit more doubt into their position, especially with that game with Virginia coming up on Saturday.
Right.
The two line, though, I mean, right now I have Kansas, Creighton, Duke, and Villanova, and I don't see both Creighton and Villanova staying there long term, especially if they happen to meet again in the Big East final. What I think is going to happen is you're going to get one of the Big Ten teams that I have in the free line right now, either Wisconsin, who has just a terrific profile. They have a 9-3 record against the top 50, which is simply incredible.
Right.
Their problem is they're probably not going to be able to get a double Big Ten championship because of Michigan's relatively easy schedule down the stretch. Michigan pretty much is going to claim that Big Ten regular season crown.
Right.
And it would be an advantage to have a double championship to get that number one seed because the committee simply loves that, as their track record shows, all the way since seeding began. Wisconsin, Michigan, Michigan State, I really think one of those three teams is going to end up moving on to the two line.
Do you take into account, because you're trying to think the way the committee thinks, Chris.
Yes.
I mean, you're trying to think, and Dick Girardi, I've already mentioned Dick already in this questioning. 2 years in a row, Dick was one of the writers invited to do the mock. So I have a decent feel just talking to him and his experience. How much do you take into effect as you do your bracketing a Brandon Dawson situation with Michigan State?
That's a big thing. And in my experience, there seems to be a bit of a double standard regarding injury suspension. It seems to me that a team like Michigan State that's, up there contending for a 1 or a 2 seed is going to get more of a benefit of the doubt, because the committee members, they get all the information as to whether, players are going to come back, when they're going to come back, what kind of shape they're in. If they find out that Michigan State is going to be, fully loaded and ready to go in time for their second round game, I think there's a great chance that Michigan State gets a nice bump because of that, simply because, they lost that Georgetown game very shorthanded. They lost a whole bunch of games shorthanded, really. They're going to get some credit for that. The same thing is, that's the same reason why I have Florida as number one overall right now, because they were dealing with injuries and suspensions back when they lost a couple of early games to Wisconsin and Connecticut, both on the road. And those were, very close games. If they had gotten their full roster together for that, who knows what could have happened with the margin. But further down the list, you think about Oklahoma State, who I have as one of the first four this week, one of the last four teams in going to play in Dayton.
Mm-hmm.
They were a team that wasn't playing very well before Marcus Smart was suspended. Michael Collins got hurt. That really kind of deflated their entire, inside game. That really limited their offense from when I happened to see them for four games down in Florida back in Thanksgiving week. They're a completely different team now, and he's not coming back. So you really kind of have to balance it based on, how a team was playing even before those injuries or suspensions occurred.
On look test, how important is it for Michigan State as to how Keith Appling looks down the stretch? Because even though he has come back, he is not the same player at the moment that he was in early January. And he's the fulcrum for what they do. I mean, he makes Harris an exponentially better player. I mean, this is just from experience of watching. I mean, because obviously I'm around it enough. So what about that in terms of placement for them and him? He's playing. But
and that's the thing. I mean, there was talk about him even sitting out, potentially for the rest of the regular season. And that may not even be the worst option in the world because, I mean, look at, well, their schedule coming up. They have a game with Illinois on Saturday, which is winnable. But then you have Iowa and Ohio State, and if Michigan should happen to slip up, you still have a shot at that regular season title. You know, you want to have Appling in there because even if he is not 100%, he's still, you know, a fairly good player. But at the same time, you probably isn't a bad idea to have him sit just so he can get rested up and be 100%. He can say to the committee, hey, he's doing great. Go ahead and, you know, you can pencil him as a two seed because he's going to be fine at 100%.
In November and in December, this particular team did not exactly play Kentucky, Kansas, or Villanova, or anybody like that. But lately, they have come on like gangbusters, and that's the team I referenced earlier, Nebraska.
Yeah.
Can Nebraska be the sixth Big Ten team in how many conference wins would it take?
I feel Nebraska has to run the table because they only have one quality win shot left in the regular season, and that's a home game with Wisconsin to close the regular season on March 9th.
Right.
Illinois, Northwestern, and Indiana aren't going to do anything for them, frankly.
Or
in terms of their RPI.
Or
their
Illinois.
RPI, though, right now is 47, so they're kind of right on that cusp. You know, they're kind of right near the cut line.
Yeah.
But I honestly think that they're probably going to have to win a couple of games in Indianapolis to really get in. Because the non-conference schedule, I mean, it's not the greatest, but especially with that first four, the committee tries to put teams that kind of have competing resumes against one another. You might have a team that was absolutely great in November, December, and struggle the rest of the year, like up against a team like Nebraska that didn't do so well early on, because I happened to see them when they were in Charleston. Saw them play Georgia, which I thought was a completely inconsequential game at the time. And now the Bulldogs are third in the SEC, and Nebraska's making a run at a bid. So,
right. You
know, you never know what can happen at that point. You know, they... You know, didn't play so well early on, but they've come on late. And I think that the committee, you know, used that first four as an opportunity to let teams grow during the year and give them that extra chance to earn a spot.
Because two 10-8 Big Ten teams have been left out before. Penn State 2009, yeah. And I believe Iowa was the other one that was 10-8 and didn't make it one year. So it's happened twice. So you're saying they need at least 11-7 and maybe even an opening round win.
I definitely think so. I really think they need to be safe and they need to win two games in Indianapolis to be sure.
How much does it? Again, you're trying to think like the committee. If they were not Nebraska, you just faceless, and had not been in the tournament since 1998 and had never won an NCAA tournament game, which I've just now recited Nebraska's basketball history.
Yep. Right. Not a very good history.
Right. Does that play a role in terms of perception?
It isn't supposed to, but that's kind of the one thing about the committee that has always intrigued me is how much of that actually does play a role. How much do those previous results, how much does that lack of history really hurt a team? And I kind of want to say it doesn't. I mean, you kind of look at last year and you kind of think about how the last few at-larges were selected. You know, they do tend to give teams that are kind of off the radar a little bit of a chance, but that's more of a guess on my part than anything else.
Right. I remember, though, in 2009, Arizona got in, and a lot of people were like, what, they were at 12. And, of course, people were upset here because Penn State didn't get in. But Arizona made the Sweet 16 that year, so they made it pay off. They actually moved and advanced.
Right. That's the same thing. I mean, that's the same with the first four, too, is you get that opportunity to play that extra game, and you're going to play, you know, 2 days later, a team that's been sitting probably for a week, if they're a six or a five, they probably got knocked out of their conference tourney early. They've been sitting. They've been getting a little rusty. You're fresh. Granted, you probably had to travel overnight, you know, to get to your next arena. But, you know, if you look at the history of the first four, there's a good track record of teams advancing pretty deep into the tournament out of it.
A couple more questions. One, who are your first four in, or excuse me, your last four in, and who are your first four or five out?
Okay, my last four in right now are in order from first to last. Xavier, BYU, Oklahoma State, and Richmond.
Okay. And BYU just had a really nice win over Gonzaga at home. Okay.
The big thing, BYU is going to be a serious test for the committee simply because they have some really nice early season wins, but they have some really awful in-conference losses.
Right.
And what people don't realize, especially about mid-major leagues, is especially when you're a team like BYU that has a national reputation and a great history, they're going to go into a lot of those gyms and be the biggest game all year, even, you know, just about on par with Gonzaga in that conference.
Right, because the name.
And so it's not easy at all. First four out, on the other hand, I have Missouri, Georgetown, Nebraska, and Oregon.
Interesting. And Oregon was very highly rated to start the season, too.
Yes, and they started out like a house on fire, and they're another one of those teams that did a great job in November and December and has kind of tailed off since then.
Who are the multiple bid mid-major conferences, in your opinion?
This year, I mean, if you count the Mountain West, that's one, and they're only probably going to get two. And the WCC, and that's it. They're really, this year, there is not the depth in the mid-majors that there's typically has been. Well, the Atlantic 10 as well, they're going to probably get five or six teams in. If you want to count them as a mid-major as well,
I think they're non-BCS conference, so they've got to fall into that. So, of non-BCS conferences, how about that question? Of non-BCS conferences, who gets multiple bids? Atlantic 10 would be one.
Yeah, the American, because the American won't be a BCS conference in the future.
Right.
They'll have probably five teams in. I think they're pretty well set.
Yep.
Mountain West will get a couple, unless they get somebody winning in Las Vegas. West Coast Conference. I do think if BYU plays Gonzaga in that final, as I wrote today,
they'll
the loser of that game is going to probably have cameras on them on Selection Sunday during the show, because it's going to be very dicey for either BYU or Gonzaga to get in.
Right.
Gonzaga doesn't have a non-conference win. They typically have the past few seasons, and it's they really are going to have to win that tournament to be sure.
Right. Wow. Fun. I enjoyed it very much. It's bloggingthebracket.com. Bloggingthebracket.com. Chris, enjoyed it.
SBNation.com as well.
Exclamation.com.
Yeah.
There you go.
Thank you so much, Steve.
No, Chris, absolute pleasure. Boy, you're loaded with some info. You really helped out a lot of people here. I can't wait to talk to you again.
Be great, too. Thanks.
That's Chris Dobbertine. And that's bloggingthebracket.com, also part of SB Nation. Kevin's take on the interview in a moment.
I can tell you right now, I think he was spot on, to use a Steve term.
You didn't even listen to it.
To what?
That's what I, exactly. Today's show brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Give Rick a call at 800-609-9484. You can go online to rewfinancial.com. You heard that, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah. You better have.
Loud and clear.
Rick and Lee are counting on you, buddy. So am I. All right. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 at 15, Hummels. Wharf, back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, got to go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai, in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
REW Financial believes in the value of total commitment. We are a working family who strives to prove strength of character by staying independent and core-focused. REW has a commitment to the community and the financial needs of our clients. Let us design your portfolio or retirement strategy. REW Financial Lewisburg, the power of freedom. Securities and advisory services offered through United Planners Financial Services. Member FINRA, SIPC. REW Financial is a DBA of REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC, and neither are affiliated with United Planners Financial Services.
Services.
probably been about 40 years since I played in the air.
I don't know about that.
What? Lawrence playing it in the morning? I don't know about.
No. Maybe 15. Maybe 15.
Did you see this email about Rashard Mendenhall?
I did.
Theodore sent us?
I did. He was looking for my take on the Rashard Mendenhall blog.
He was sitting on a couch two seasons ago in Pittsburgh having a vision of swimming in dark waters toward an object in the distance, which revealed itself to be a statue of the Blessed Mother. The next day, after I tore my ACL in week 17, he wrote, the journey I envisioned in the last 2 years of rebuilding that would follow. Says he's fully at peace. That's kind of self-explanatory. It's just an introspection, I guess.
Well, my take on it was that maybe he's thinking about retiring.
Well, yeah. I would think so.
But, you know, he's been known for these, you know...
Yeah.
You know, these run-on blog type things, but he's done that before.
Well, there have been a few times where he fumbled in a game where Steeler fans felt like they were swimming in dark waters.
Yeah. Amen to that.
Like, what are we doing? Where's the shore?
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Time for Open Line America, your chance to tap the Kevin Hearn knowledge bag.
That's going to take a long time.
800-795-9565. Did we get Michaela Schifrin for this half hour?
No, I think she's doing Ellen.
Yeah. I'll ask you in 6 months what she's doing.
Okay.
I sense it won't be Ellen. Or Jimmy Fallon or Late Night with Seth Meyers.
Let's see. 6 months. No, she might be actually in her little French chalet or whatever it was where she spent the World Cup season this year.
Wonderful. That's a good life.
Yeah.
It's a good life. We should have you broadcast from a chalet.
Which is not to be confused with a chateau.
Oh, no, I'm in the chateau. And today's show brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Give Rick a call at 800-609-9484, or you can go online to rewfinancial.com. In these times, you really need somebody that you look at and say, you know what? Need a portfolio. I need to have somebody take good care of my money. I need somebody who puts my interests first. Rick is exactly that guy. Sunbury Motors, well, in the one thing that is really great when you have a business that I think speaks volumes is when you have repeat customers where they look at you and they're so satisfied with how they've been treated, the process of buying a car, the process of maintaining a car. When you get repeat business in that business, you are a winner. And Sunbury Motors has decades and decades of being in the business and repeat customers. Why don't you find out why people look at them and say, you know what, I'm buying from them again. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. It is interesting to see in the last 2 weeks the issue of tolerance be a primary focus. Michael Sam announcing before the NFL Combine that he is gay. Jason Collins, who had announced last year, signing a 10-day contract with the Nets and playing and participating. The NFL floating the idea of a penalty against hearing the N-word on the field. And Arizona, Governor Jan Brewer voting down vetoing the bill from the Arizona legislature that would have dealt with not serving customers based on religious reasons. I think that's a general feel for what the bill said. If I'm wrong, someone please correct me. That way we have it right.
I think you're pretty close with that.
And the NFL, received a lot of publicity for saying, hey, look, the area Super Bowl's in Arizona next year in Glendale. This goes through, or we might not play there. In fact, Tampa was the backup. Now, the NFL received a lot of publicity for that because the Super Bowl is the largest single-day event on the planet, and it is the NFL, but they weren't the only ones. Delta Airlines, for example, U.S. Airways, getting involved. U.S. Airways has a hub in Phoenix. Delta Airlines, which, because there's a similar bill in Georgia, Delta has a hub in Atlanta. Getting involved. I believe Microsoft also threw their name out there. All of them as companies, corporations lobbying. Because in this day and time, being portrayed as intolerant is bad personally and bad for business. Now, whether or not the NFL should legislate language on the field, but language is legislated, not legislated, but in the workplace is not tolerated. You use certain words in the workplace, at minimum, you'll be reprimanded, at worst, fired. In our business, for example, as we sit here on this show, if we were on satellite radio, Sirius, which is where I think Dick and I are on Sirius 85 tonight, as an example. But if this show were solely on Sirius and not over the air, we could say words that we would not be allowed in the current form we are now. Now, would it make a better show? Absolutely not. But there are certain things Kevin and I can't say right now. Certain words, and anybody who is our age and bought the George Carlin album knows what those words happen to be.
All of them, by the way. I think he used every one of them.
All of them you can't use. So while some people say there's a freedom of speech, well, for example, we are restricted on some speech on this station by the FCC. Certain words we can't use. But do I want to use those words? Absolutely not. It's ignorant to use those words. And it's wrong for me to say it. As for the N-word, I've heard an interesting debate come up. Michael Wilbon, for example, has brought up interesting things about that word used in the home loosely and so forth over the years. But there is a bottom line. I could never use that word, ever. And it would be dead wrong for me to ever use that word. So in a self-policing way, should the NFL make it a penalty? I think Chris Bosh said the right thing for the Miami Heat. He said, look, he said, there are a lot of slurs that shouldn't be used. Now, for those who say, well, they're trying to mandate societal change, and there certainly are words in the workplace on the field that they really don't want mic'd up. But at the same time, if you used any of those words in that wide spectrum we just talked about in the workplace, would you be spoken to? And would it be, if it was a repeat offense, grounds for dismissal? Yeah. As for the NFL, what they did by dangling the Super Bowl as a chip in the fight in Arizona, my point is they aren't the only company or corporation that did that. You know, Jan Brewer, the governor of Arizona, had until, I believe, Saturday to veto, and she did it last night. I understand there are religious beliefs, but in the end, people are people. People are people.
I don't know, though, how the NFL is going to single out one particular word and make that a penalty.
Well, they can.
All right. Let me rephrase then. I don't know why you would take one particular word and make it a penalty as opposed to a list of words, so to, for lack of a better way to put it.
I understand that.
I'm like, where why is, this is not going to come out quite right, but you know, that word is better than this word or not as good as this word, or that's why we selected this word. I don't know. I don't understand that part of it. I don't know how you draw the line at one particular word is what I'm trying to say.
I don't either, but at the same time, I know it's a word I should never utter in my lifetime.
Absolutely. Not saying that it's not
appropriate. From a personal responsibility attitude. From a personal response, and I think that there needs to be a personal responsibility on behalf of the players to stay away from it as well. Penalizing them for it, puts a little heat on the officials to hear it in a stadium where there's a lot of yelling and screaming.
See, I think that's where the problem lies more than anything else.
If it does, it would come under the guise probably of unsportsmanlike conduct. But, for example, we hear about such rules. All right, let's take, for example, the crown of the helmet rule. That was the big one last year. How many times did you see that called this year? I didn't see a single game where it was called.
I was going to say, I think I saw it maybe once or twice, but that's about it.
Where the offensive player, it was the Trent Richardson rule.
Oh, you mean from the running back standpoint?
Yeah.
Oh no. I was thinking of the defensive. But no, I did not see it at all. You're right.
That's right. It was and how much of a big deal was it?
No, it was a real big deal.
Oh, it was a huge deal, big deal. Blah 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 blah. We go through the season and we're still waiting to see the first flag. So sometimes things are brought up. Oh, it's like a 15-yard penalty for that. A tip-off of, look, we're trying to clean some things up on the field language-wise.
I wonder how much of it is because of the microphones that are on the sidelines now that maybe weren't there in abundance 10 years ago.
Well, I mean, for example, there is a website you can go to, and there's certain things you hear Peyton Manning say. For example, getting mad at a running back for missing a block or whatever, because when Peyton Manning's on offense, the stadium is dead silent. That's why, for example, and you laughed this off, if I recall.
I did.
The ability to say Omaha in the Super Bowl because of crowd noise.
Or the lack thereof.
You couldn't hear him say it because of crowd noise. In Denver, you can hear it all the time. You can hear everything he does.
That's very
the announcer shut up. The announcer shut up. The PA shuts up. There's no music. The crowd shuts up. It's just him. It's like literally being there in a practice when he's calling out signals. Well, at that point, you also hear the defense yelling and screaming as well. Well, let's face it, the microphones pick up everything. They're not just picking up him. They're picking up everything. And also certain guys are mic'd up on NFL films and so forth and use that. Now, who knows what has to be cut out there?
I wonder what we don't hear. And, yeah.
Well, and that may be what brought this to their attention. I mean, it could be as simple as that. I don't know. All right, today's show brought to you by Rick Weibel, REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Give Rick a call at 800-609-9484 as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Penn State, Ohio State tonight at the Jordan Center at 7. I beat the Buckeyes the first time, 71-70 in overtime. Big game for DJ Newbill. You'll see some changes in the starting lineup tonight. John Johnson probably is not available. Very sick. Donovan Jack has been very sick, but finally got back to practice yesterday. Jordan Dickerson will get the start tonight. Geno Thorpe will start. Tim Frazier on senior night starts. Also, DJ Newbill will start, and Ross Travis will start. So there'll be changes in the starting lineup tonight. Dickerson starting because Jack was so sick the last 2.5 days. Donovan finally got back yesterday. Jack will play tonight. Johnson probably will not play tonight. So that will be at the BJC this evening. Ohio State has been on a roll since the loss to Penn State. They've changed their starting lineup. Sam Thompson gives them more length. Lenzel Smith flips to the backcourt. The problem with having Aaron Kraft and Shannon Scott in the backcourt together is they're too similar. You need to have guys that have different styles to them. Well, Smith is a shooter, and Kraft is a distributor and a defender. Unfortunately for Ohio State, when they have Kraft and Scott in there together, they have two distributors and two defenders, and neither one's a great shooter. That's why Thad Matta smartly made the move and changed it up. We're making the turn into the month of March. I want to get Kevin into his comfort zone. Who do you project in the high school football playoffs this year?
The high school football playoffs?
Well, you usually have it projected out like 4 or 5 years ahead of time.
No, I haven't quite got it. It's summer. That's my summer. That's my summer,
summer
job.
Thing.
Yeah, it's my summer job.
So you project out that. Joe Tessitore, I talked to Joe for a little while today after practice, projects Heisman winners. So.
Well, you may have a better shot at that. That may be That may be a little easier.
No. Not sure. Just thought you'd be ready to go with that, and I'm a little disappointed.
I'm sorry. I know I let you down.
I mean, Buhner's finally back from New Zealand. He's depressed. Thought for sure that I put one right over the plate for you to hammer. Instead, you know, you meekly waved at it and walked back to the bench.
I'd like to say I fouled it off down the right field line. Come on.
No, there was nothing. I didn't even get a name. Nothing. Not even a town. I don't do that till summer. Wave and a miss. Walk back to the bench.
Well, do you want me to just randomly come up with a name? I mean, I give some thought to this. There's actually...
That's all you think about.
There's actually a strategy to it. There's a formatics to it. A formula.
That's all you think about besides driving your kid to an athletic scholarship.
Well, we've tried enough sports. One of them's going to stick.
Have you thought about talking to people at Verizon?
For luge?
Yes. Don't you think your kid would be great in the luge?
He's already a member of the Adirondack Lugeing Club.
Great start.
That is not a joke, by the way. That is not a joke. In March, they have a couple of opportunities. If you're a member of USA Luge and the Adirondack Luge Club, to go up to Lake Placid and learn to slide. He has expressed interest. But going up there when I was a kid, it felt like a 3-hour ride. I didn't realize it was 6.5.
Well, that music couldn't have come up fast enough, could it? All right.
You just thought it was going to be a normal comment that I was going to respond to. You were not expecting that answer.
No, I don't think anybody was expecting that. I could have put anybody on this show, and no one would have given that answer. Today's show brought to you by Rick Weibel, REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Give Rick a call at 800-609-9484 or go online to rewfinancial.com. Back tomorrow from the Sunbury Motors Studio, we'll discuss more of the Adirondack Luging Club.